Hello, everyone. I want to welcome you to the last session before lunch. Empowering Innovation, Seize the Opportunity. And I'll introduce the speakers in order of where they're sitting. John Crutchfield, the Program Manager for Mobile ND and Academic Technologies Consultant, University of Notre Dame. Hannah Insko, Manager of the Media Commons at the Pennsylvania State University. Katie Vail, Director of Academic Technology, Faculty of Arts and Sciences, Harvard University, and Jennifer Sparrow, Director of Emerging Technologies and New Ventures at Virginia Tech.
Thanks, Diana. I'd like to now give a little further introduction of our group, starting with Katie. Katie is an Educational Technology Director, mom, wife, teacher, knitter, cook, and former alt-rock disc jockey who is horrified that music she used to spin can now be heard on oldies format stations. Jennifer is an explorer of emerging technologies, a champion of technology in teaching and learning, a part-time blogger, an aspiring photographer, mom of three, wife of one, with not enough hours in the day. Hannah is a disruptive technologist and media resource provider, filmmaker, knitter, cupcake baker extraordinaire, and mom-to-be, who's traded in purple hair for appropriate purple work tights. I'm addicted to change, so I love to work with people to apply technologies to be able to do things that they've never been able to do before, and I live in an older three-bedroom house with a wife and three kids, so not quite enough room. So I use YouTube to figure out how to do serious remodeling projects. So again, welcome to everyone here and everyone online. We had a great time working on this presentation. Now it's your turn. So innovation should be fun. Laugh and smile. And now let's talk about what is innovation. Jennifer.
Sure. So there we are. You'll have to ask John about his Blue Man outfit there and his picture after the session. So we do want to get you all engaged in this piece. So for the folks here in face-to-face and for the folks online, we want you to define innovation in four words or less. For the folks that are here in person or for folks that are working online with a group of folks, we want you to turn to your neighbor and share those four words. You can share those in the chat window of the online session, or if you're here face-to-face, you can share them on Twitter. ELI13Innovate is our own hashtag for this session as well. So four words or less, and we're going to give you 3 minutes to do that. Start thinking. Do 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 do. Folks online, you're welcome to tweet as well. That hashtag is ELI13Innovate. One more minute. Okay. I'm not seeing anything on the Twitter feed. And I know Ellen is a tweeter, so I'm waiting to see what comes up on hers. I'm going to call y'all out because I know many of you in the audience here. So. All right, it's kind of quieted down, so I'm going to take that as our cue. Anybody in the audience here want to share what their four words were, or if you found your neighbors to be more provocative, do you want to share their four words or less? Yeah, I've got somebody over here in the red and green. Sure. So the coffee has done great works for innovation. So should we say coffee is innovation? Okay. Experimentation unafraid of failure. That's excellent. You win. What else? You got another one? Unafraid of failure. Yes.
Scaring the status quo.
Scaring the status quo. I love that one. Thank you, because we have to make folks uncomfortable. Go ahead. Novel, disruptive, risky experiment. Did I get it right? Excellent. So we've got folks on the Twitter feed as well. Invention that has impact. Innovation in four words. New solution, maybe risky. I love that one. Transcend, new, inventive, improved, and better. That was five words, so we'll have to take one of those off. Innovate. Here, I like this one. Anything but normal. So we had a lot of fun thinking about this. We actually went through this task ourselves. Is there anything else online that we need to be aware of? Sure.
I was going to share one from the online audience. Learning from failure, reflecting in and on action was one. Bravery, resources, risks, and out-of-the-box thinking.
Out-of-the-box thinking. I love that. Ellen, I'm going to call yours out because I did call you out here. She did tweet. Creativity, imagination, risk-taking, pioneer. So excellent. So I think we all have sort of a general idea of what innovation is. What we wanted to talk about is how we hope that we're empowering innovation at each of our own institutions. And so this is just the beginning of the interactivity that you're going to have here. So if this made you really uncomfortable and you can't live with that, the door's there. If the uncomfortability made you excited about this, we're glad you're here. Please stay and continue this conversation. So I'm actually going to turn it over to Hannah, who's going to talk about the hot teams. And if you followed along with our tweet up, I asked if your teams were hot, like Penn State. So I'm anxious to hear about this. Thanks, Hannah.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming out and being so interactive. It's great. I'm not going to go over everything that's on here, but just a little bit of food for thought. We'll hit on that in a second. For us at Penn State, I work for Education Technology Services, which is under the big umbrella central IT at the university. And for us, faculty engagement is not a one-way street. It's actually building relationships. And it's through these relationships that we can find out what is it that faculty need, what is it that they want, what are the challenges that they're facing, and how we can help. The best conversations, they start with simple questions like, you know, what are your challenges in the classroom? What could we do to help you become more effective with instruction? And we listen to them and we figure out what it is that we can do, that we can provide, that's going to help them. In order to do this, though, we have to have our own, we have to have our own little arsenal put together so that we have tools in place that we can then go to and hand out to the faculty that come to us. That's where the hot teams come in. The hot teams are a really quickly, sometimes even self-assembled groups of people, usually around five or six people. They get together. They do a quick assessment of upcoming new technology, or it could be just a new trend or a new novel approach. It doesn't have to be about the technology. Sometimes the topics for the hot teams can come just from anywhere, anybody, talking in the hallways, thinking about, you know, what is it that you've been hearing about? What are some buzzwords that have been coming out? And, you know, can we quickly take a look at that? They are designed to be low barrier to entry, low stakes, and nimble. We do this in about five or six weeks. Because our hot teams are so quick, they only go about 5 or 6 weeks, each week matters. So the first week, we spend delegating or assembling our teams. Second week, we delegate topics for research, and we start gathering our data. The third week, each of the team members write up their piece. That's going to be presented in the white paper at the end. Week four, we share our drafts with the team, make appropriate edits if necessary. Week five, we compile these sections into one cohesive whole, and then in week six, we can publish that. Like I said, these are just really quick assessments on whether or not this tool is going to meet the needs of the faculty that we've built relationships with. The hot teams are a really fun way to channel our inner inventor, get creative while still producing tangible outcomes at the end. We We do this by formalizing with a white paper. It sort of follows the 7 things to know about template. So we answer the questions, you know, what is this tool? Who's using it? How does it work? Why is this significant? What are the downsides? Where is it going? And what are the implications for teaching and learning? So our hot teams are just a jumping off point. They are, when it comes to investigating EdTech initiatives, if the technology or the tool passes the hot team sniff test, it can then move on to get into our faculty fellowship queue, which is a little bit deeper and of an investigation where we use the students in courses to really flesh out, really try to break that particular tool. Because if the hot team doesn't do it, the faculty fellowship typically will for the weaker tools, where we can get more into assessment and recommend it for a pilot or even into production if it ends up being a really good tool. I really liked hearing the no fear of failure. It's the hot team process is one thing in our department where we hear that a lot. It's okay to fail with a hot team. It's encouraged. We want to weed out the ones that aren't going to work right off the bat. So perfectly okay to fail. So my activity for this particular section, from everybody in the audience, you guys can talk to your neighbor, anybody online, what new concepts or tools do you think you could use a hot team to investigate? Anything that you guys have been hearing about here at the conference or even back at your universities, how do you pick the best ideas? So go ahead and tweet or talk to your neighbor. What are some cool things that you guys have been hearing about that you could, you know, do a quick assessment, 5-week assessment on? Go ahead and tweet it out. ELI 13 Innovate. All right, just so that we have enough time for my other esteemed colleagues. All right, I need some hands. Who has good ones? Anybody want to announce what their?
My local preferred learning technology. Students prefer learning technology.
Oh, excellent. Student hot teams.
Yes, yes. We have had a few hot teams that had students in them. It's been really enlightening. Anybody else? Oh, come on. There was so much conversation. Student hot teams. Student preferred technologies. Okay, digital humanities in libraries. Okay. And if somebody else? Yeah. Online.
A few from online. Blended learning, faculty relationship management tool, in other words, a tool to help track who is working with whom to share information.
Very excellent. Yep.
From online, we have badges.
She was on the mic.
Yeah, I should turn on the
table. Sure. So from our Twitter feed, we have badges. Makerspaces, HyFlex came up twice, iPads, Google Plus, excellent, thank you. Digital media assignments.
All right, so my task for everybody in here is to go back, grab 4 of your friends, and start investigating. All right. All right, I'm going to turn this over to John. He's going to talk about the mobile initiative over at Notre Dame.
Thanks, Hannah. So what I have up here is, in hindsight, what a project plan might have looked like if we had actually planned this. As you may guess, innovation is hardly ever pre-planned. And what I want to note here is that the first official mobile event that I was directly involved with was back in the fall of 2008. Our academic technologies team identified mobile as something important that we really wanted to focus and spend some time and energy on. So you can see that we did some socializing after that, talking to faculty, staff, and students around campus. And we had a sort of informal event on campus, invited some people. We had about 50 people show up, tons of energy in the room, lots of ideas. We filled up flipboard sheet after sheet after sheet with ideas of what kind of apps we could develop. But you see a big gap. So between that spring of 2009 and then the early 2010, there wasn't a whole lot really going on visibly. But there were things happening in the background. So at that first campus event, one of our university communications web developers attended, and in his own time, because this was not an officially sanctioned project, he worked on a mobile-friendly website, m.nd.edu. So we were able to launch that in January of 2010. The iPad was announced in the spring of 2010, and it supported the EPUB format. So again, academic technology said, this could be big. This looks like it might be the first e-reader. We know it was a multifunction device, but an e-reader that would be suitable for higher education, multimedia capable, color, high resolution, etc. So we put together what we called the e-publishing working group. Again, socialized, found some people that were interested in e-text, and started talking about what would this mean for campus if it really took off. And a faculty member who attended that, Professor Corey Ank, said, I've been dying to have the paperless course. I want all the assignments turned in. I want to grade them electronically, mark them up electronically, return them electronically. Could we do a pilot? Good question. Can we? All right. Let's do some more socializing. So to purchase 50 iPads, our OIT, Office of Information Technology, Asperger Library, the Law School, the College of Business, and our Center for the Study of Languages and Cultures all pooled some money together and bought 50 iPads. And so our first paperless course went in the fall of 2010. Out of that, we got some good press, lots of publicity. Word started to spread around campus a little more that, hey, we're getting some momentum behind this. And a staff member that worked in the College of Arts and Letters and the IT organization put together an iPad faculty brown bag. Just invited faculty members, hey, we're going to talk about iPads, how people are using them. And a faculty member attended, Professor Elliot Visconti. He was so excited after that that he created a Tempest for Shakespeare, or Tempest for iPad, Shakespeare's Tempest, as a study tool, a really engaging way to read and engage with the text. He published that app on his own, and then he's working with us this semester to pilot an iBook that he created, and his course materials are delivered through iBook and iTunes U Course Manager. And so we just kept going a little bit more, a little more frequently. So as you can see, the gap between events here is getting smaller and smaller. Our project plan is gaining momentum, so to speak. At that point, we decided we wanted to do some Android pilots. So we did those in the fall of 2011. UCAT, our University Council for Academic Technologies, approached our CIO, Ron Kramer, and said, we think mobile needs to be a higher priority. At this point, mobile hadn't risen to be on the strategic plan. It wasn't really being talked about at the highest levels of priority. So our CIO said, John, make a summit happen. Okay. So basically, we went back to that first campus event in the spring of 2009 and said, that format worked pretty well. Let's try that. So we invited people. This time, we got about 125 people. Lots of energy. Again, a very similar experience to the 2009 event, but this time, there was more institutional support. And at that point, our CIO said, okay, we're going to dedicate some resources, so we're going to create this mobile program manager to really work on creating a campus strategy. And fortunately for me, I got to be that guy, and so now I'm the mobile guy on campus. So I started gathering data, and by that, really, I was talking with people around campus, talking to folks like yourselves in higher education, talking to vendors, just getting as much information as I could to create this strategy. That summer, so the summer of 2012, we had an intern, actually a Boilermaker. I'm a Boiler, so go Boilers. He had the right skill set, and we saw it as an opportunity to have him do some really cool stuff. So he created a web-based way to on mobile-friendly devices, or on mobile devices, in a friendly, navigatable, easy-to-use way, grades and course schedule, wildly popular with our students. And so we delivered that right before classes started in August. We had a student who was an undergraduate representative on the University Council for Academic Technologies, helped us with planning the first mobile summit. She got excited. She planned a mobile hackathon. So the first mobile hackathon happened this fall. We had our second mobile summit this fall. And the great thing is between our first mobile summit in the spring and the second summit in the fall, we had people say at the first summit, we heard a lot about what we're going to do. At the second summit, we heard a lot of what people were actually doing. So people could see that progress, see that momentum. And we just kept going. We created some wireless projection pilots. We had the BCS Game Day app. And we won't discuss the game itself or what happened there. But what's really important there is Adobe approached Notre Dame and said, we want to do this with you. And Notre Dame said, great, we'll do this. And they approached athletics. And it is only because our group had been working on mobile over these years that we knew the process with Apple to be able to get that published in such a short time frame. Because if we didn't get it out before they shut down for their Christmas week, we couldn't have published the app in time for the game. So all this work, and if I take away everything, I just want to see, want you to see that there are these sort of fits and starts and a little bit of progress, and then the acceleration happened. And so what I like to call this chart is the overnight success of mobile at Notre Dame in only 4 short years. So now, seize the opportunity. What that chart showed is we hit a few people at a time who got energized and took action. So we seized on the opportunity when the student was excited about doing the hackathon. We seized on the opportunity when the faculty member was excited. We seized on the opportunity when staff members were on campus. So we try to socialize and we try to find those people, and then we try to help them accomplish what they want to accomplish. So now, what's your go-to app or mobile website? And yes, Angry Birds is an acceptable answer. Share your favorites, just like we have before. Talk around with each other, what do you like, and start tweeting it out, and then we'll ask you for some input again. All right, we're starting to get some feedback online, so just want to show you that up on the board here, we've brought up our university's mobile presence. Two of these are actually mobile websites, so they're just HTML in the browser. And two are actually native apps. Can you tell which are which? So up on the board here, we have our four universities' mobile presence. Two are mobile websites, and two are actually native apps. Can you tell the difference? Can you tell which is which? Things have progressed. Over the years, early on, it was pretty easy to tell which was which, but HTML is getting better. I'm not going to tell you. You'll have to go find that little research project for you. But some things that came through, favorite apps, we heard Evernote and...
Screenchomp, Safari, Notability, SugarSync, QuickOffice. Nobody put Angry Birds, John. I'm sorry, I should have tweeted that.
I'm not hearing any games. Layer
is a pretty cool one. The mobile UW app, where is Jen? She's promoting it. Thank you. EchoFon, Safari. So some good. One bus away. Awesome bus location app for the Seattle metro area.
Great. Thank you, everybody. And anything that you wanted to share from the online?
A couple you didn't mention already, Google Drive, Google Maps, Stitcher, AccuWeather, and the New York Times.
Great. Thank you. All right. And now it's Katie.
I'd like you to imagine a world in which there's a collection of individuals, each of whom has his or her own skills and talents and abilities. And these people are really used to kind of working on their own for their own constituencies. And they really are a little bit ambivalent about each other, and they may even kind of resist working together. So I refer, of course, to last summer's blockbuster, Marvel's The Avengers. But I really, after seeing that movie, drew a lot of parallels to how I feel we've progressed at Harvard in thinking about how we collaborate with all of the various people who provide instructional support services in helping our faculty in designing new courses. So Harvard has a reputation for being something of a siloed organization. We have 11 different schools. Each of those schools, have some of their own IT and their own libraries and things like that. And actually, when I first started, I commented on this to a senior faculty member who quickly corrected me and said, Harvard does not have silos. Harvard has cylinders of excellence. So... and having these cylinders of excellence can make it really challenging to innovate. So what I want to sort of recount for you is sort of how we have tried over the last few years to bridge our cylinders or our silos and how to really affect good change in education. And I'm going to use our undergraduate program as an example. So Harvard, about 4 years ago, Harvard decided to change its old sort of dated core curriculum. And the faculty voted in place something new called the General Education. them. And there were, a new dean for general education was hired, and she was looking for help from all quarters in putting this together. So she kind of made a list of everyone she could think of who provided any type of educational outreach or support, and she asked faculty, she gave faculty this list and said, here, you know, go meet with these people. And, of course, there was a deafening silence from the faculty who had too much to do, and they didn't know who these people are on the list necessarily, and so not really a whole lot happened. And so then Dean Kennan, who actually in personality does resemble Nick Fury a bit, decided she needed to get the Avengers or the group together and have us meet with faculty. And when this first happened, you know, so there would be about, you know, six or seven of us from, you know, groups that you see here, from my team in academic technology, the libraries, the museums, the writing program, our teaching and learning center, our GIS specialist. And we would all sit around the table, and we would all be trying to get the faculty members' attention. Like, ooh, I can do maps for you, or I can do a website, or, you know, I can take your students on a tour of the museum. And the poor faculty member would just, like, sit there holding on the table like a deer in headlights. It was just too much for them, and they were overwhelmed. And, again, they wouldn't really follow up with anybody. And so what we realized is that, you know, we had to learn how not to scare the faculty and how to really work together. And this was really harder than it seems. So this is sort of my main point, is that there is a real human side to innovation, and you need to teach people sort of how to collaborate in order to innovate. I'm sounding like Jesse Jackson a little bit. But the way we did this is that we were these sort of groups who, honestly, we didn't always know what the other ones did. I mean, I had this vague idea of what the librarians did. The Writing Center people, I knew they had red pens, and I didn't really have a good understanding of what they did, and nor did they have an understanding of what we did. So we had to really kind of sit down together and have a pretty earnest, you know, workshop or meeting to talk about what we all did. So we had six of us representing our different teams, and we really tried to sort of get to know each other, where we were coming from, what our backgrounds were, and what we could bring to the table in terms of instructional support. So, for instance, you know, my writing colleague Tom sort of had thought of me as kind of the IT geek, and he didn't realize that, you know, I have a doctorate, I have taught, I do, you know something about instructional design. And he was like, oh, I just thought you, like, did websites. I didn't know you could do all those other things. And, you know, we didn't realize the types of, say, geographic information systems work that one of my other colleagues was able to do. And so we spent a couple sessions. So we met like three or four times to give everybody a chance to talk, show demos of the types of work that they do. And we had to get to the point where any one of us could represent the others if they weren't there. So now when we meet with faculty, instead of sort of ganging up on them, we try to figure out who would be sort of the best first contact, and we go out and talk to the faculty, sort of do some needs analysis, and then we're able to kind of represent the viewpoints of the other five in suggesting things that might be possible. So by doing this, we've been able to come up with sort of some innovative projects. So here's one example. So we had a faculty member who was like, you know, I'm just tired of, I always have my students that, you know, they write two papers and they do a final exam and that's about it. And so what we determined was that, like, oh, well, how about multimedia assignments? And my team could teach the students how to use iMovie. And then the libraries piped up with, well, we have a room that we're trying to figure out what to do with. We could set up a lab there where the students could do this. And then our teaching and learning center said, yeah, and we can work with the faculty on rubrics for grading those assignments. And our writing program said, oh, and you know what? We have a screenwriting instructor, so he could teach people how to do storyboarding and screenwriting and script writing. So we were able to put together a whole new program on sort of multimodal communications, and many faculty have been able to take advantage of that for their courses. So what I wanted for you to do today for your own activities, having heard our experiences at Harvard, is I need you to think about who would be those people on your campus who you might want to partner with if you're not already. You know, they might be people that you don't know very well. There might be people that, it had never really occurred to you to talk with before. So what I'd like you to do is, one, make a list of some of those names. So, you know, seriously, I want you to write them down, or you could talk to your neighbor and brainstorm them. I don't want you to wait and do this once you get back. And pick one of those people and, you know, invite them out to coffee. Send the email right now if you want to. I mean, you can specify you want to talk to them about instructional support, not that you're, you know, just macking on them or something like that. But so take a minute, jot down a couple of names, or if you don't even know their names, maybe you don't even know who these people are yet, who are some other people who might provide instructional support from groups similar to what we had, you know, at Harvard? So things like your writing program, your teaching and learning center, your IT groups. Identify a couple people, pick one, and drop them a note and say, hey, let's get together next week and talk, brainstorm about what we could do for instructional support. So, go. You don't have to tweet their names. You don't need to call anybody out. You know?
You could if you wanted to put the pressure on them.
Yeah. John reminds me, I should have said, you can also offer to take them out for shawarma, for those of you who are Avengers fans.
Is there anything from our online group on the Twitter that or on the online chat? Okay. All right. So now you've got homework on several different levels. We're going to go ahead and just wrap this piece up. We want to leave a few minutes for questions and some stuff on our Twitter feed as well. So I hope you've left some with some really good ideas. I love it. We they're learning more from each other than they are from us, which is terrific. So I just wanted to talk about innovation and how we've sort of thought about the way that we can encourage faculty to think differently about what they're doing. So for me, it always comes down to the right tools at the right time with the right people in the right space. I'm going to cover this very quickly. If you want me to slow down, we can have coffee later. Shawarma, yeah. For me, it really is, I can't tell you enough about the relationship, so it builds very nicely on what Katie has said. You have to go out there. You have to talk to people. I corner them in the grocery store, so I'm sure some people see me coming and push the cart the other way. This really requires not only you reaching out to folks and asking what are they doing in their classroom, what is it that they are having challenges with, what are their issues, what would they like to do differently, what do they hate about what they're doing right now. If any faculty member tells you they love reading those 15-page research papers at the end of the semester, think about other ways that they can do that. Maybe it's a video project. Maybe it's a digital narrative piece of that. It is about listing. It's about finding opportunities and making those connections. So as you see technologies that roll across your desk, you might see something and say, gosh, that would be a really good fit for Professor Hall. He's doing this project with Nature and American Values, and we can fit that in there. So have those relationships. Talk to people. Listen to what they have to say. So the relationship for me really is the key piece. The second piece is the right tools and the right training. So for me, that follows up right on with what Hannah has said. You need to have the tools. You need to test them. You need to make sure they work. You need to be okay with failure. You need to have a safe place for the folks to do that. And that goes right into the last piece of this, which is the right place for people. For us, we have what's called the innovation space. I didn't name it, but I'd love to take credit for it. It really is supposed to be a place where faculty, students, staff are welcome to come to try new technologies. It took me a very long time to get our students to make eye contact and say hello when people walked in the door so they felt welcome there. I can tell you now that after 4 years of working at this, we hire people based on their personality. Can they talk to people? Can they pull them in? Can they say, gosh, we don't have that, but let me offer you another solution rather than just no. In my shop, we call it the itattitude. So we say there's no itattitude allowed, and that's the IT attitude. So it's not that we know it better or that we can do it more efficiently. We really have to meet you all where you walk in the door. So again, the right tools, the right time, at the right place, with the right people and the right relationships. So we wanted to give you a few minutes for question and answer. I did want to do this. I can't actually tweet and present at the same time. I can tweet and be a panel at the same time. But I did want to say someone tweeted out that their definition of, or their CIO's definition of innovation was from two sticks, fire. And so if we can think about lighting that fire, I think that's a perfect piece. So questions from the audience, thoughts, ideas? Yeah. Oh, thank you for asking. So this is actually a four-year-old story. So 4 years ago, I got invited to my very first ELI presentation. It was in Orlando. It was very cold, if you all were there and remember it. The cold was probably what you remember. But I took down the network for the entire hotel, so the conference, everything. And we sort of shared that story about how you break things and go with the flow. So Monday night, we were out bowling, trying to think about how we'd be innovative, and we broke the bowling alley. So they gave us the pin, and we figured this is our talisman against anything bad happening any longer. So thank you for asking.
You were in New Orleans on Sunday.
I was at the bowling alley. Other questions? Anything from our distance folks? So we know how to innovate? John's got a question.
It's more of a comment. There's innovation happening on all of our campuses. We know that. We're part of it, but there are also other people on campus doing it. So finding those people and supporting them and being persistent. Like I said, you know, our four-year overnight success for mobile was because we had the idea. We decided in 2008 we were going to spend the time, and we just kept at it, and we just kept at it, and now we're finally making some progress. So don't give up. When you have that idea, when you find that person that has that idea, support them and keep working with them.
One of my faculty said I pushed him over the cliff. I hope that's not a bad thing. We have 5 minutes. You want lunch? Okay, I guess we're finished. Thank you all so much. We appreciate it.